Welcome to the Raising Your Game podcast, where I bring to you the stories, insights, and ideas from those in the world of sport to help you build a stronger mind, more resilient body, and healthier life. Whether you're an up-and-coming athlete in the making or a seasoned professional, this show promises to give you something that you can use for positive change and help you in raising your game. This episode is sponsored by Sport Yogi, the app for those in sport who are looking to add yoga, mindfulness, and meditation into what they do on and off the field. You can find classes that are going to improve your flexibility, your mobility, also meditations around your sporting activities, so improving your ability to deal with anxiety, nerves, pressure, confidence, and also breathing exercises that you can add into your everyday, just short, sharp exercises that are going to have an impact on both your body and your mind. If you're interested in getting started today, then head over to sportyogi.com where you can download the app. You can also head over to the iOS and Android app stores where you can download the app today. So that's sportyogi.com for your chance to get started for completely free on the Sport Yogi app today. Hey, welcome back to the podcast. I'm Lewis Hatcher, and in this episode, I'm going to be speaking to Olympic shot put champion Michelle Carter. Her success in the 2016 Rio Olympics made her the first American woman to win the shot put since the women's competition began in 1948. But in this episode, you're going to absolutely love Michelle. Her energy is infectious. Her personality shines through throughout this entire conversation, and I was extremely glad to have met her and recorded this episode. She's an inspiration to all young athletes that want to achieve great things. We talk about a range of subjects around confidence, parents coaching their kids, managing your expectations, and her outlook on all of these topics that have led her to start You Throw Girl Confidence Camps. Bit of a side note, Michelle's father, Michael, had a 9-year NFL career with San Francisco 49ers and won a silver medal himself in the shot put as well in the Olympics. So it's a really fascinating conversation, an incredible story as well. The story of how she won the gold medal in the 2016 Olympics is an amazing story. And I know you are going to love this episode with Michelle. So let's get into it. And I give you Michelle Carter. Enjoy. Michelle, thank you so much for coming on, and I'm really glad to get the chance to meet you, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Actually, this is going to be good fun.
Yeah, same here.
So one thing, what are you up to at the moment? So what are you in training? Are you preparing? What is your schedule looking like at the moment?
Well, yes, I'm definitely still training. My schedule is actually pretty busy these days, just because with training and since a lot of things have moved online, I have more speaking engagements than I've had that I will normally take because I don't have to travel. So I can just like pop on the computer and do that. So during the day, I'm training. In the evenings, I may have 1 to 2 speaking engagements, which has been fun.
Yeah, and COVID with, like all athletes, has hindered the physical training. Have you had a shift in some? What does a shot putter's training look like when it's had to shift to a bit more virtual, I guess?
So the shift for me was definitely, I'm now training in my garage. Oh. I'm not going to a gym at the current moment. I just don't feel too comfortable with that. So just getting more creative with my workouts has definitely been the thing I needed to do because I don't have all the same equipment I would have at a gym. But now since like some of the schools have opened back up, because where I work out, where I throw is at a school. And so I've been able to go there and still throw. So my throwing hasn't changed. It's like the biggest change was the weight room for me.
Yeah. And just giving people a little bit of an insight into what a shot putter's training looks like. Is it a blend of weights, skills, a lot of throwing, obviously, but what is that sort of blend and look like for you?
So it's a lot of throwing for sure, because throwing is not a natural movement. Throwing the shot put is not a natural movement. So you have to do a lot of reps to kind of get it ingrained into your mind and your body. I lift a lot of weights as well. Like having your strength up is very important. But some things that I picked up in college, I went to school at the University of Texas, and I was the only thrower on the team. So there are some things that I would used to do that the sprinters would do. So I do sprints, I run, I do a lot of plyometrics to keep that explosive power there. So I do a mixture of a lot of little different things. I take Pilates just to kind of keep my body, my smaller muscles strong, because that's also important.
So how have you felt with Pilates? How do you go with that?
I love Pilates, actually. I really enjoy it. It's hard. People think, oh, it's not that bad. Like, listen, holding your own body weight is a workout on its own, because you have to activate muscles that we wouldn't normally use. Mm. Or if you are supposed to use it, you don't know you're supposed to use it because your bigger muscles take over.
Yeah. That's my thing with yoga. Like, I do yoga, and that's the same thing. Like, you're doing stuff that not your standard squats, your standard lunges, and general athlete exercises that you do in the gym. You're just not doing them, and you're finding muscles that you didn't know you had, essentially.
Yeah. You're sore in places. You're like, there's muscles there. I didn't know.
Yeah, exactly that. So obviously with your journey to becoming Olympic champion, where did it start for you? Like, where did you first, and obviously we'll talk about your father a little bit and his impact, but Where did this sort of love come from? Where did you start to begin to even feel like, okay, this is something I can actually exceed in?
Well, I guess once I was in high school, because I was asked to join the track team in junior high. And I was like, okay, you know, I'll try it. But growing up, I didn't know about my dad's history in track and field, because I grew up with my dad playing football. Because he played with the NFL for 9 years. So I didn't know anything about track and field. So when I started it, my dad's giving me the side, like, how you decide to pick this out of all things? But they asked me to try it out. So I tried out and I liked it. So by the time I was in 10th grade, and I took my first international trip, and we was in Debrecen, Hungary. And I still don't know where it's at on the map. I can't find it, but I know I was there. And I just remember thinking, like, this is cool. Like, I'm here with a whole bunch of other 14, 15, 16-year-old kids, and we're overseas in another country wearing the official Team USA jersey, and I didn't have to pay for any of it, right? My parents, like, I'm here by myself, and it was just an amazing experience, and I just knew, like, in my mind, I wasn't thinking, like, oh, I want to go to the Olympics one day. My real thought was, how many USA jerseys can I collect? Like, that was the goal. Like, how many jerseys can I get? Because I thought the gear was just so cool.
Yeah. How much stash can I get? That is one thing when you do turn pro in something, that's the stash is a big thing. So just for people who may not know, your father, like you mentioned, 9 years in the NFL, but also an Olympic silver medal in shot put. And that's incredible. You just mentioned you didn't know his history. No. And I think as well, he's got the high school record.
In
America.
Well, he has the high school national record, is what we call it in the US. But in, like, for the whole world, it's like the 18 and under world record. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So you didn't know anything of his involvement with that. And
no, because back in those days, he went to the Olympics in 1984, and the Olympics were considered amateur.
Yeah.
So you could not be considered a professional athlete in any sport and still participate in any Olympic movement, because the whole Olympic movement was considered amateur. Wow. So when he signed his contract for the NFL, he forfeited the rest of his track career and he couldn't go back.
Wow. So he had no real... So it was more of a surprise when you started getting into shot put rather than him putting you... Because most people would assume, if they were just to read that story, that they would assume he has guided you down that path of shot put.
Yeah. No, he actually was, like, protecting us from it, because he didn't want other people to push us down a path that we didn't want to go to. He wanted to make sure that it came from me. So when I told him about it and they asked me, he questioned me up and down, like, who asked you? How many coaches were in the room? So when they asked you, what exactly did they do or say? Like, he wanted to make sure that they didn't mention anything about him, but they were just genuinely wanting me to be on the team and that I was genuinely interested.
Yeah, right. And you felt that love and that passion for... for the shot put start to come about?
Mm-hmm, I did, because I like learning new things and it was challenging for me. And so I was like, okay, I'm doing this. And I did started doing summer track in here in the US, and I went to Junior Olympics. We have like our little summer league, and I saw all these girls come from all over the country. And I'm like, this is actually pretty cool. Yeah. And we get to compete against each other, because normally you're just used to your little area. But now I'm like, I get to compete against the whole US. Like, next year, I'm coming out better. Like, I just knew, like, okay, this is it. I like this. I can do this.
So when did the goal of the top Olympic Games come about? When was that sort of, right, that's my goal?
Yeah, so the idea came up first time when I was in college in 2004. I was a freshman, and I could have went to the Olympic Games, but I was having a horrible freshman year. I didn't feel that I was ready. And so I opted out not to go to the Olympic trials, and I chose to do junior worlds.
Right.
And so here I am, I'm in Grosseto, Italy, and like we're going on the same time, some of the Olympic stuff is going on, and they get out the results. And I had just had a huge PR at this meet, like a huge PR, like about 3 feet, maybe like a meter. And I look at the results, like that throw that I threw at the junior worlds would have put me in the top 10 in the world.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, well, maybe I could have went. But I was like, I didn't want my first experience to be bad and, regret it, because I think I was going to be too nervous. So having like the rest of my career, especially in school, going through college and going through the system, definitely helped me, because I was able to build my confidence up. So when I was able to go out there from my first Olympic trials, I was ready. I knew this is what I wanted to do. So over time, like the first Olympic Games, I'm like, hey, let's see how I do. I finished 15th. I'm like, okay, now the next goal, can I get into the top 8 of the world?
Yeah.
And then from there, I got into the top 8. I'm like, okay, so can I win?
Yeah. Yeah. So with the rewind there, just to that moment in 2004, what did you do you, in reflection, do you kind of think back to like what it was that was ultimately stopping you going? Was it a self-confidence? Was it your belief in what your ability could do, or you just felt you hadn't thrown that far before yet?
Yeah, like I didn't want to go and I'm barely there. Like I'm not even a contender.
Right.
Like I feel like I just wasn't ready for that stage. If I go, I want to know that I'm ready and I'm making the finals.
Yeah.
Right. That's always been my mentality. It's like, you get your first 3 throws, make sure you get your next 3 throws. Mm-hmm. And that's always been my mentality. And I knew that I wasn't prepared for that at the world stage.
Yeah.
And even though it turns out that I probably was, but I didn't feel prepared. So I'm like, you know what? Let me just chill. I'm in college. I just got to college. Can I get used to this first before I figure out the next stage?
Yeah. So as you're starting to that whole experience happens and you're starting to now move, right, I'm going to get onto the world stage. Correct me if I'm wrong, your father started to coach you a little bit and he actually got involved.
My dad's been my coach since day one.
Oh, really? He actually was completely from day one. Wow. So has that relationship been and grown over time? Like, because as many different sports, like not just in shot put, but parents and sport and getting involved with a child's upbringing, and that can be sometimes people can perceive it as toxic because there's just this, it's a tough relationship. How was it for you?
Yeah, we had our hard times. We had our hard times. But one thing I think, well, with my dad, with the help of my mom, they would definitely were able to kind of navigate, like, okay, you know what? She really likes this. She doesn't like this. Okay, we could push her here, but we can't push her there. Because I'm a little stubborn, I have to admit, right? So if you push me too hard, it's something that I'm not feeling comfortable about, I'll shut down. And so because my dad knows me, he was able to kind of navigate and push me when he knew he could, and then back off when he know that I needed him to back off. Because my dad understood what it was like to be an athlete. It's only so much he can make me do. Hmm. I have to be willing and able to do the work and put the time in and the effort in to take it to the next level. And so it was always a fine line. But what my dad would always say, he would push me. He was like, because Michelle, you can do better. Like, Michelle, you're really good at this. You just don't know it yet. And over time, I was able to start to see the vision that he saw. He saw that I had all this talent, but I didn't see that in the beginning. And so it was like, I had to really just kind of lean on him. And because he's my dad, I trusted that he's not just telling me I'm good because he's my dad. He's telling me I'm good because I am good. And when I bought into his idea, that's when I was like, okay, what do you need me to do? How can I be as good as I can be? And that's when our relationship definitely really changed, when he realized I wanted it the same way that he wanted it for me.
Do you think there was any expectation on you to do well, just with his history, his background, and him getting involved? Did you feel any expectation at all?
I didn't. You know, my dad, he's a nice man, but he's not always the friendliest. And people knew that. And I think my dad did that on purpose so that people wouldn't come up and talk to us. Because, you know, in Texas, like, football is a religion. So he definitely wanted to protect his family. And so I didn't get that pressure from people. People may talk about it, but they only would talk about it so far. So, and I think it's because my dad kind of set the tone for that. Like, let my kids be the kids. Let them figure it out. Don't put us against each other, you know, like, don't compare us, because she's her own individual. And so having my dad saying those things when we're doing these articles when I was young kind of helped set the tone to kind of put boundaries around people to not come at me like, well, your dad did this. Is this what you're going to do? No, I didn't feel that pressure at all. And my dad would always tell me, like, this is your road. This is your thing. Whatever you want to do, I want to help you do what you want to do. I don't care what I did, because this is not my life. This is your life.
So if there's people listening, and especially young people, and maybe even parents that are listening, kind of a two-pronged attack here with this question is what advice would you give to the athlete, the young athlete, to deal with their parents that perhaps are involved in their sport? And what would your advice be to the parent who is involved in their child's sport?
So for the child, I'm going to tell you, listen, your parents want what's best for you. You're not going to like what they want you to do and what they're going to tell you to do. But if you do it, you'll be rewarded for that. Because there's a method to their madness, right? We don't always see it as young kids, but if you really just lean into what they say. If they're telling you that you can be great, believe them and work as if you're already great. Now, parents, you can't make your kids have something you want them to have. And you have to really be honest with yourself and assess your child. Is this pushing my child away when I'm making them do this? Or are they into it? Right? And if your kid really isn't that into it, then you pushing them, trying to be better than what they really want to be, is only pushing them further away from you, because now you're forcing them to be something they're not. And that's the thing, like, kids want to be known, like, my parents know me, they know what I want, they're going to help me make the best decisions for me, versus this is what my parents want you, and you're going to do what I say, and I say this, and this is what you're going to do. Then you're pushing that child away from you. And that's that child and parent relationship. The child has to be able to trust the parent and come to the parent, and knowing that their parent is looking out for them more than they're looking out for themselves. And sometimes parents in sports, they get caught up in what it looks like. Well, I was this back in the day. I need my kid to do this. Like, no, that kid don't care about that.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a fine line. But when you figure it out and you actually spend the time to figure it out, it's rewarding on the back end.
I think you actually said it before as well. Like, you were kind of, to have your dad involved in sport and to be an athlete himself, he knew it from both sides of the coin. And that I think would be my own personal advice for parents, is to look at it from the child's point of view. Like, is my behavior really helping them or hindering them? Am I throwing my expectations onto them, or am I helping them with their own expectations and their own self-worth and value and things like that, rather than, like you said, just throwing what they should be doing, or you believe they should be doing, onto them.
So,
I guess a lot of people could look at you and your father and be like, oh, well, she competed in the Olympics because her dad competed in the Olympics. And there'll be a kind of, I guess, nature versus nurture argument. What's your stance on, I have my own personal opinion on nature versus nurture, but do you feel your dad being who he was and what he did as a big part of getting you where you were?
Yeah, so the thing is, me, my brother, my sister, we all threw.
Right.
Right? We all threw, and we all three took different paths.
Right.
Totally different paths. They had the same coach I had. And then I was the first, so I didn't have a sibling that was going to help me. My brother and sister had me, right?
Yep.
So all three of us got the same coaching. All three of us had the same opportunity. What the three of us wanted were totally different.
Yeah.
And that's what parents have to realize. Like, one child's going to want one thing, the other child's going to want another, and this child's going to want something totally different. And you have to play into what that child wants. Mm. So, you know, and with all of our paths, our parents are okay with that. Because there was a point in time when my sister was like, well, okay, I did this. I should try. She at least tried to go out for the Olympic Games. And I saw that it was a struggle for her. And my dad saw it was a struggle for her. And I told my sister, I'm like, sis, you don't have to do this because I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Like, if this is not making you happy and this is not where you're seeing your life going, because this is really a time commitment and you have to really put a lot of effort into this. If your heart's not in it, I told her it's okay to stop. And my dad confirmed it with her. And she was like, you're right. I really don't want to do this. And she almost felt like she had to at least try because my sister's doing it. And I'm like, no, sis, like, if this is not for you, it's not for you. And it just took like this burden off of her, because now she was trying to live up to what other people think that she should do versus living up to what she feels is right for her life.
Mm-hmm. That's a really nice story and example, just having three siblings that are involved in the same discipline and three different paths. It just shows that it's not inherently built into you. Like, it's your environment and how you react and interact with that environment is a huge part of what plays out where you're going to go.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Go on, sorry.
Oh no. And I was saying, like, with the nature and nurture part, I say, you know, you nurture what you want to grow. And I believe you should grow the person, not the skill.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's a powerful, powerful line. So you then end up in the Olympic finals, especially 2016. Yeah. And you're up against the two-time Olympic champion. You're on your last throw and you throw for gold. And
yeah,
it's such a cool story. It's such a cool story. But I want to think of where your mind was at going into that last row. You've literally, and I love how you describe it as your one golden shot. Like, that's a really, such a cool little statement. But where's your, just before you're taking that throw, like, what are you thinking and where are you going with that?
Yeah, so the whole competition, I am in second place the entire time, right? And I'm like, okay, Michelle, you have one more throw. I had to say a quick prayer, and I'm like, Lord, please. You said I could win. Like, you have to come through for your girl right now. Like, this is it. I only have one more chance. And I just said to myself, like, Michelle, you got this, right? Because, like, the one thing that I have been waiting on to happen in my technique the whole time, it finally happened on my last throw. So what I was waiting on, to be a little bit more patient with my upper body, to give my legs a little bit more time to work to create more power. And so on my last throw, I felt the thing that I've been working on all year. And wow. It's crazy that I worked so long for this one thing to show up for me on my very last throw. Right? Like, I don't know when it's going to show up, but I just hope that it shows up in time. And in this time, it did. So it was just crazy how it all happened. Because when I threw it through, I knew it was a good throw. But did I know that I won in that moment? No, because Valerie still had one more throw. And she's thrown further than me. Even what I threw, she's thrown further than that in her career. So there's a possibility I could still end up in second place, right? But at that time, I'm like, man, I have to compete all the way through. The competition's not over until it's over. And I could have easily settled for second. But I didn't want to.
Yeah. That process of you about to throw, you're purely focusing on what you're describing is like the internal cues that you're about to go for. You're not thinking the distance. You're just thinking, like, connect these dots and then the distance takes care of itself.
Yeah, because if my technique is on point, I'm going to throw far.
Yeah.
Because science doesn't lie, right? You know, science works the way science is supposed to work. So if I create torque and do these things to create that torque, that means if I create more torque, I create more power.
Yeah.
That's it, right? Yeah. So if I do that, I'm going to have a better throw.
Yeah. So once you've done that throw and Valerie's got to take her throw, like, talk us through nerves, your weight in, just... hoping and praying that this isn't going to go past yours?
Yeah, I was actually thinking like, okay, when I threw it, I'm like, oh, that felt good. And then I'm waiting around and I'm like, is that a number one by my name? I said, let me act like I'm supposed to do that because I don't want to give her any energy to throw further than me, right? Because then when she threw and then we're all sitting there waiting because where we're standing, we can't really see how far it really is. It's not that clear to us. And so when her name went up with her mark and there was a number two by her name, and I was just like, really? Like, this is how this plays out? Like, all this time? This is how this works? So it's just crazy how things turn out, because a lot of times we will dream about how things are supposed to happen, how things are supposed to go, and then it happens. And it happens way different than the way you thought it was. It's like, you know what? I don't care about how I get to the end as long as I get there.
Yeah. So when you've won, like having never been to an Olympic Games, what happens after you've won? Like, what's the whole sort of experience like once you've actually finished your event and then towards medal ceremony?
It is a whirlwind. Actually, it's because we don't get our medal ceremony, do our medal ceremony until the next night.
Right.
So the minute I won, the media that I had to do that night, I remember getting back to the Olympic Village at almost 4 o'clock in the morning. And then I had to turn around and be ready to go for media at 6:30 in the morning. Like, it was just a crazy, crazy night. And then the days, I literally for a whole year and a half, I was totally booked within the first 2 weeks of winning the Olympic Games, which was crazy. And that's the part I'm like, no one ever prepared me for, right? Because of course there's a high demand, especially when you do something that hasn't been done for your country before. It was a lot.
Yeah.
But I made it through.
Yeah. I actually just that little story that you were telling about how all of your training had clicked until that last throw. There's going to be a lot of young athletes as well that will feel probably like where's their training going and it's not amounting to something. I'm just really struggling to see that progress. So I just feel like that little message in there is actually really important to trust that your training and what you're doing will get you somewhere. You just can't tell when it's going to happen.
Yeah. So it's like, I think of it this way, like you have this bucket and you work to fill your bucket. And then whatever you have in your bucket on the day of competition, that's what you get to use. So sometimes you go to a meet and you only have like a couple of drops of water because you didn't do that much work, right? So for these competitions, I wasn't really focused on all the competitions. I knew that I had one big one that I want to get ready for. So I'm trying to put as many drops of water in this bucket. I'm trying to have this bucket filled and overflowing so I have more than enough that I need for the day of competition. And so that's how I think about it. I do all the things that I could do. I leave no doubt in my mind that I could have done more than what I did.
Yeah.
I want to check all the things. I want to have everything done. So when I go to this competition, like, I am overflowing with everything that I need because I put in the work. I put in the time. I put in the effort.
Yeah. That's a really nice way of looking at it. And I think it just still sticks out that putting in the work is ultimately, as an athlete, that's the most important thing. You're going to have to need it at some stage, especially under pressure. You're going to have to go there.
Yeah.
So since you finished, you've set up a few things, the confidence camps, this You Throw Girl has to be the best name of something I've heard. That's such a good name, and it's brilliant.
Thank you.
So what was the reason for setting it up and the mission behind it?
Yeah, so I actually set up You Throw Girl before the Olympics. So it's called You Throw Girl Sports Confidence Camp, but I didn't have the camp till after the Olympics. And it was something I had been thinking about for years prior to, because I'm getting messages from parents and from kids, and they're like, hey, like, how are you doing this? And parents are like, how are you so confident? How do you just believe in yourself? And in my mind, I'm like, this is a real question, because I get asked this all the time, because I'm a bigger girl. I'm not the smallest girl. I don't have a six pack. So there are a lot of girls who are built like me or have some similar things that they can see themselves in me. And their parents are like, my daughter doubts herself. She doesn't feel good about herself. Like, how do you feel good about yourself? And how can I help her feel good about herself? And so when I saw that was a real need, I put together this camp because a lot of times in sports, I really do believe that we're so skill focused that we're worried about the skill and how well can you do this? How well can you dribble a ball? How well can you throw? How well can you do this? But at the end of the day, if that athlete doesn't have confidence that who they are alone without a skill is more than enough, it doesn't matter what skill sets you give them, they're still going to not feel confident.
Yeah.
And so I put together the camp, and at the camp, we focus on so many different things, and then we add a workout on it. So yeah. Like for me, the workout is the afterthought. All the other things are all these different exercises to help them kind of just do some inner work. So we do like vision boards. We do goal setting. We have a girl talk session where the kids are able to ask questions and not be judged, like things they may be struggling with at home or with their friends or just something on the inside. And I have a counselor there. I bring in an adolescent OBGYN to talk to the young ladies about their bodies. Because when you're going through a lot of like women, our bodies change and the stuff are going on. They're not sure this is normal. Am I supposed to feel like this? Like what's going on? And so I want them to know like, hey, we've been in your shoes. You have a source to come to, and when you have a question, and no matter what you do in life, you can do it. And we're going to help you, give you tools that you can always use at any time that's going to help you in any phase of life that you're in.
Yeah. What have you seen, or what do you believe are the things that are causing this, I guess you could call it a pandemic of low confidence in young people? Because it's over here as well. It's been in Australia where I've been, and it has to be the biggest, men and women, like the lack of self-confidence. And even like you said, body image there as well. Like that's not a thing that is solely for women. Like I've seen young men that believe the expectation on what their body should look like, especially in sport. Like you said, especially when you're going to a track and field where there are people that have got six packs and they look certain ways, and then that brings a level of self-doubt and comparison. What have been the things that you've seen that contribute to this load?
You said it. Your last word was comparison.
Yeah.
You only feel less than when you feel like someone is more than you. You're comparing, well, if they have this and I don't, they're better than me. No, they're different than you. You are not them and they are not you. No two people are alike. Even twins are different, right? Identical twins are different. And so we're so focused on watching somebody else's lane that we don't take care of ours. And so when I say that, so confidence, the definition of confidence is having trust in something or someone. Right? So self-confidence is having trust in yourself for you. And so when we start to compare ourselves to others, we start to not trust ourselves because we feel like we're lacking something, that we don't have something because it doesn't look like theirs. And I'm like, no, like we have to not look at compare. You can celebrate these people because that works for them. You have to figure out what works for you. So for me, how tall? I'm 5'10". Valerie is 6'4". Why would I compare myself to Valerie when we are clearly built totally different? So things that she's able to do in her technique is not things that I can do in my technique because I'm not as tall as she is. But I figured out what works for me. What makes me feel good? How do I want to present myself? When I wake up in the morning, that's why they call me the shop diva, right? Because I get dressed the way I want to get dressed for myself. I'm not here to please anybody else. And that's where we get caught up. We compare and we want to please others. When really just if you focus on yourself and you take care of you, you learn how to trust you, that you show up for yourself and your strengths and you go get help in your weaknesses and you put yourself together the way you want to present yourself. And that's it. Like you're winning.
Yeah.
You are winning doing that. Then you have the confidence to do anything because you know who you are. You know what you stand for. And you like how you look and feel because you have accepted yourself.
Yeah, that's beautiful and amazing. That's unreal. What are the things that you do, the practices, the work that you do for yourself to help you? Like you mentioned, it is the work on yourself. But what does that look like for you?
Yeah, admitting when you're wrong and when you're not doing what you're supposed to do, right? Like a lot of times people don't want to be wrong. You do not want to be wrong about anything. It's hard, but admit that you're wrong and it's okay. Admit that you might be lazy sometimes, right? So when the results, you don't get the results you want, you'd be like, well, I don't know what happened. You know exactly what happened. Let's be honest with ourselves. And a lot of us rely to ourselves because we don't really want to know the truth about ourselves. But to really do that inner work to get to the level that you can be all of who you were created to be, you have to be honest with yourself about who you are and where you at and what you're willing to do to change it. Because some people don't want to change. And then some people realize if I change, it's going to cost me more than what I'm willing to give. And that's up to for you to decide. So you can't be mad when you're stuck, when you're not willing to sacrifice to change.
Yeah. So do you feel you have moments of low confidence in your life now? And if you do, how do you navigate that sort of? So for me, I like to, the way I do it, and I have the confidence goes up and down all the time. And yeah. And my belief with it as well, and my view on it and how I see it is that you never really lose your confidence. It's just kind of hidden either under or blurred through stories that you're telling yourself. And that could be, like you said, that mm-hmm. comparison. It could be you telling yourself a story that is not true. You're kidding yourself yeah. with how you're behaving or acting or doing. And then ultimately it's about viewing those stories and recognizing that once you look at them and see them for what they are, then you can put into action for that real confidence to shine through.
Yeah.
And so I've created things like little mantras that I will go to if that's something that in a moment where I feel low confidence and I feel like mm-hmm. it's diminishing in that time or moment. Is there something that you do that kind of snaps you back into, Michelle, what are you thinking? Where are you going with this?
Yeah, because normally when I start to feel not so confident, I'm looking at what I don't have versus what I have.
Yeah, gratitude. Wow, yeah.
So instead of worrying about what I'm lacking, be grateful for what I have and work with what I have and ask for help for what I need.
Yeah.
Like that really helps, because what happens is when I try to do things that's really not in my lane that I don't have the capacity to do or I don't know how to do, I just set myself up for failure.
Mm.
And then now I'm over here lying to myself, telling myself, oh, you can do this. And I know good and well I can't do that. And then I fail. It hurts my confidence, right?
Yeah.
But when I realized, okay, Michelle, like, go ahead and say you need help. Go ahead and say you need this. Like, okay, we can do some of this. You cannot do all of that. And that's okay, because I used to feel less than when I couldn't do all these things that I felt like, especially as a woman, that women should do and should always do. And I'm like, well, I'm not your average woman, so I got to let that go. Like, there's like these expectations that people want to, expectations people have on you. And we try to live up to those expectations, but we never spent time to set those expectations for ourselves. And so when you spend time with yourself and think about the things that you want, you start to set your expectations and how you want your life to live, then it doesn't matter what people say, because you already set the tone for yourself. And then you stay in your lane that way. And sometimes we may run out the lane a little bit, but we can get back, right? Mm-hmm. That happens. Life happens. But as long as you're willing to be like, you know what? Okay, let me realign myself back up with my expectations and no one else's. And that's what I do. Like, okay, why am I doing this? Am I doing this for them or am I doing this for me? That's kind of like where I go back to, but that's where I get my lowest when I'm trying to please others versus myself.
Yeah, right. That whole managing your own expectations is what you can control. You can't control what other people expect of you. Like it's not manageable. Yeah. And I imagine when you're running these camps, the power of being able to be open as the adult in the room and the person that is expressing, like, I get it wrong. It's okay. I'm getting it wrong. So you now have the power to admit that you're getting it wrong. Do you see that shift in the young people that you're working
with? Yeah, because these young girls, they look up to me. They think I am like the most amazing thing in the world. And I'm like, do y'all know me? Like, you don't know me, right? But for me to show them that I bleed like you bleed, I get hurt just like how you get hurt. But this is what I did to overcome that. This is how I would dealt with this. And this is how I dealt with that. And you can just see over time, they're like, they're thinking and they're like, I get it. You see these little light bulbs go off. And sometimes if it doesn't go off right then, a parent or one of the kids will send me an email and let me know, like, during this time, she remembered what you said. And it helped her through this moment. And that's what I'm here for, right? Like, I am here for that. Like, if I can do anything for these girls, that anything that I say or do can help them at any point in their life, then I'm doing my job. That's what I'm here to. I'm here to help others to be their very best. And so whatever I can do that can at least put a seed in them, and that seed may not come back for another 10 to 15 years, that's okay, as long as I gave them something.
Yeah. How often are you running the camps? How often do they take place?
Yeah, well, actually right now, once a year.
Right.
I am waiting for myself to fully retire from track and field to take this camp all over the U.S. and all over the world. So pretty soon I'll be able to come and have a camp more often.
And your plans are, you're heading to Tokyo?
Yes, that's so, the plan.
So how's that? How are you feeling? How's the mind, the body feeling for Tokyo?
Yeah, I'm feeling good. Of course, there's still so much going on in the world that we don't know what could possibly happen in the future. But that's not my job to worry about that. As of today, the Olympics are happening and I'm training as if they're happening.
Yeah, right. So that's full steam ahead, straight over there, head down, get involved.
Yes. Yeah, I'm going to work with the information that I have and that's it.
Yeah, look, I've literally just got a couple more things. This has been incredible, and one of the things I like asking is whether you've had a book, a documentary, a quote, a person that you feel has contributed to you having success in what you do.
Oh man, if I have to be totally honest, the book that I probably read the most, well, not probably, the book that I read the most is really the Bible.
Yep.
I'm gonna be honest. Like, for me, the book of Proverbs is the book of wisdom. And there's 31 Proverbs. And there's 31, you know, depending on what month it is, days in a month. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that I constantly read because I need wisdom to help make decisions every day, right? And so that book has definitely helped shape me and help me make decisions along the way in my life. Because I realized that my life is bigger than me. Mm. And that I affect other people. So I want to be responsible for the decisions that I make and the information and advice that I give that is going to add to people's lives and not take away.
Yeah, I think if anything, the biggest vibe that I get from this conversation is that working on you as a person and rather than the athlete is a big part of what you do, like really focusing on you as a person and how you interact with the world, and the Bible and any religious text is helping make people become better people. I think that's a really powerful
message.
When
we focus on being a better person, like everything else is easy, right? But as long as we're good on the inside, that's the hard part.
And I guess my final thing I'd ask is, like, would there be any advice you would give your younger self now, knowing what you know?
Yes, if I would give my younger self advice, I would have told myself, girl, work harder.
Really?
Work harder. Because it took me a while to kind of understand working hard, because working hard, like just doing everything that my dad says, that's like minimum work. I could have pushed myself more if I knew where this was going, right? Like if I knew or had a glimpse that this is what I was going to do or what I really wanted, I would have worked harder. I worked hard. But I felt like I could have done more if I thought about it in that way. But I didn't know at that time.
Yeah, that's such a tough one as well, because like you said, if you'd known where you were going to go, you would. But everyone who's trying to work for something doesn't really know where it's going to lead to.
No, you don't. But I would say, like, whatever you think you're doing now and you think you're doing a lot, do more. You'll thank yourself later. Like, okay, I think I've done everything. Oh, I could still do more. Let me go ahead and do the more. Like if you always think about, let me do the more, you always be, you know, like you always be like one step ahead of yourself.
Yeah. There's always another stone to turn over somewhere.
Yeah.
Look, Michelle, this has been incredible. Just to wrap up, where's the best place for people to find you, get in touch with you, especially with, I think, like I said, you may have, you're going to have people talking to you about confidence and things like that. Oh, just at the end.
Sorry. The best way you can get in touch with me is definitely at shotdiva.com. That's my website. I have a newsletter, so we're working on getting that out. So you definitely want to sign up for that to just get all kind of great information. And of course, I'm pretty much Shot Diva on everything. IG, all the social media, that's me.
Yeah, I recommend getting onto Instagram for people to check Michelle out. Just some of the Instagrams, the videos that you're putting up. Just keeping it so real for people. Like that's, I think, especially for athletes. I think athletes... Yeah. If even at the top end, the real pointy end of the world of sport, like people hide it behind that facade and they hide behind like what they believe, and you are not doing that. Like that is, it's so refreshing to see, and keep doing it, like, because it is awesome. It's awesome.
Thank you.
No, thank you so much for your time, Michelle. Take care.
Yes, no, this was great. Thank you, and I wish you all the best.